welcome back to Many Rivers Books and Tea, Jim Drever. Jim Drever has been a great supporter of Many Rivers Books and Tea, and we're always happy to have him here. He is the author of his latest book, End Your Story, Begin Your Life. And I always look forward to your talks, Jim. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you.
Many Rivers.
Thank you, Jim. Well, everybody. I live in L.A. now. I used to live in Sonoma County for 32 years. I moved a year and a half ago to L.A., kind of a move from the mountaintop to the marketplace. Because most people move from other direction. But I wanted more. I was tired of walking on Sonoma County beaches so I can be the only person there. Or hiking alone, I was ready for more action. So I went to the marketplace, and I'm happy to be there, but I'd love to come back to Sonoma County. And three of the people, I live in a communal household called the Yoga House, and at least three of the people wear the kind of shoes you wear. What do you call them?
These are Vibram, five fingers.
Right. Yeah.
Is it hard to get your toes in that?
Yeah, they're not slip-ons. Yeah.
But they say they're very comfortable.
They're great. Yeah, it's just like walking barefoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're just being here. That's what I teach. I teach people, I really teach awakening to freedom. But the path to freedom, the way to freedom, is as you become freer of everything inside your head, all the stories and thoughts that bind you, that create suffering, create conflict. As you become freer, you find yourself just more present. And, there's more here. You realize this is it. There's nowhere else other than here. People write volumes and volumes about metaphysical realities, other dimensions, golden cities. But that's on the mind, imagination. The only thing that's real is what is here right now. So, and the freer we are, or the freer we come inside, the more we realize this. And we just breathe and delight in the magic and mystery of the present moment. Would you mind moving?
Here? Mind somebody?
Yeah, yeah.
Or can you see? No, let me move. Maybe I should move here. Thank you. With pleasure. Okay.
See, we got a small group.
Yeah, so I'm...
Now, Jean, you have to sit next to... There we go. Perfect.
Oh, I'm blocking you now.
No, you're not blocking me.
You can say, okay, here we go. Thanks for saying something.
Relax and be present. So we'll do a little guided meditation just to facilitate being present. So I invite you to uncross your legs and close your eyes and just go within for a moment. Go within, be very present with yourself, be present here now. Be aware of the flow of your breath. Slow your breath down so it's you're breathing deeply and slowly within. Your eyes closed and just breathing slowly and deeply. And just being very present with you within yourself. Be present with the room around you, even though your eyes are closed. Be present with the energies around you. And notice the sounds in your environment. The sound of my voice rising out of silence, dissolving back into silence. A hum of the air conditioner or fan, fridge maybe. The sound of your own breathing. How all these sounds come and go. They come and they go, they shift and they change, but you, in your true nature of the aware being, is always present, noticing them. Before your thoughts, before your ego, before your personality, you are this aware being. So just rest in that place of pure awareness, pure consciousness. And then notice the sounds in your environment. Your breathing, how that comes and goes too. And then pay attention to the sensations and feelings in your body, how they shift and they change, they come and they go. But you are the aware being that which notices them, and you are, as that aware being, you're always present here now as this pure aware being. And then notice the thoughts and images passing through your mind. Even the I thought, the me thought. Notice how these thoughts come and they go too. They're always shifting and changing. They're never constant. And you are the aware being which notices the thoughts, the I thought, the me thought. And pay attention to the relationship now between your thoughts and your emotions. And how many of our emotions are triggered by these deeply held thoughts? I'm ashamed, I'm sad, I'm guilty, I'm depressed, I'm lonely, I'm embarrassed, I'm angry. All these thoughts create, which I call stories, create the emotional reactions in the body. Just rest in the pure awareness you are, noticing all these phenomena, body, mind, thoughts, stories, sensation, feeling, images, sounds, they all come and go, but you are the aware being which is always present here now. And now just open your eyes and look around and be the pure aware being you are. A little more relaxed. So this is it. This is reality here now. There's no other reality than this. Your loved ones are experiencing their reality now. They're in a different place than you are. You've come to this talk, and your loved ones are experiencing their reality. But I know this, if your loved ones are in the same place you are now, here, being very aware of being present here now, if they're open to that presence too, they'll be in the same place in their reality. Imagine the whole world being awake and conscious and present. What a different world it would be. All wars have come out of people's stories of possession, of territory, of religion, belief. As I say in my book, no story, no suffering. And that's the way I describe freedom or enlightenment. I use the word freedom, but it's enlightenment, self-realization, awakening, liberation, it's all the same thing. And freedom is being present without any story. We all have stories, we're storytelling people. And stories are important, but the great realization is discovering that we're not our stories, we are this clear, present awareness in which the stories come and go, in which the stories arise and fall away again. And look at your own stories. Most of us in the group are old enough to have had a number of relationships, right? People who were important to us at one time, but now they're not important because they're not in our lives anymore. That story's gone. And now we're experiencing a new story. So I was on this quest for 20 years, looking for enlightenment, looking for freedom. That was the driving force of my existence. I wanted to be free. And I got free and free, and I discovered this teacher named John Klein, whose books are up there. He's passed away now. He passed away at the age of 70. 86? No. He was in his 80s and he died in 1998. 86, he was 86 and he died in 1998. I stayed with him for 11 years. He would come to this country from Europe. He was in Paris, and I would see him talking a couple of times a year, and I would go to a workshop. And I would read his books, all the books on the table that I've read, and I would cull out things from the book and kind of meditate on them, contemplate them, and I got free and freer of my thoughts. And so one day in 1995, I woke up completely, and I've been free ever since. But as I say in the book, awakening is an event in time, but the embodiment of awakening is a lifelong journey. So I'm learning to embody my awakening more gracefully, more graciously. I'm a much better teacher now than I was 2 years ago or 5 years ago or 10 years ago. So it continues to evolve. We're still human. And so once I woke up to the truth, I realized that I wanted to share this with people. And so I've written books about it. This book, End Your Story, Begin Your Life, is the latest book. And the cover designer neglected to put my name on the cover. Yeah. And the publicist I'm working with down there, he said he thought it was brilliant. End your story, begin your life. That's it. No author, no nothing. Just end your story, begin your life. You have to turn over the back to see my name. And the subtitle, Mastering the Practice of Freedom. And so I just went with it. And money is the number one issue people fight about in their relationships. This is from the book. In the face of the realities of the marketplace of daily life, it requires nothing less than awakening to be able to let go of worrying about money. And that's very true. Many people, from another section of the book, many people assume that awakening is synonymous with freedom from desire. There's actually not being attached to desire. People who are awake are still living, breathing, feeling human beings. They still have desires and differences. They still have desires and preferences, but the difference is they're not attached to them. So the desire is not fulfilled, they just let it go. Because the energy of desire itself arises and falls all the time. Another section from the book. Some spiritual teachings support the idea of getting rid of the ego, even annihilating it. Many spiritual teachings talk about annihilation of the ego, to become enlightened or free. Yet upon awakening, we find that the ego is still here. Indeed, in terms of conscious creation, your ego will become your ally. Because whenever you say the words I, me, or mine, that's the ego speaking. Ramakrishna, the great Indian saint, said, the ego makes a very poor master, but a very good servant. So when I say I must go and call my friend, that's my ego being a good servant. I must, and maybe I'm staying at a friend's house and I must go and call them. That's the ego speaking, and that's the way it serves us. So I want to talk about the practice of freedom, which is the subject of the theme of my book, Mastering the Practice of Freedom. And this is what makes my work a little bit different or unique. My work has been compared to Eckhart Tolle, Ajahn Shanti, Byron Katie, but I have this unique practice, the practice of freedom. It's basically a three-step practice. And you do it whenever you're suffering, whenever you're in conflict, whenever your buttons are pushed, whenever you're angsting about anything. That's when you do the practice. Why don't you do it when you're happy? Because when you're happy, you're happy. You don't want to change. Mm-hmm. Happiness, if it goes on too long, can become complacency. And complacency can lead to suffering eventually. So, and this practice came out of my own experience of freedom, my own experience of awakening. So the first step is, when you're suffering, step number one, be present with the experience. In fact, I talk about in the book, about in chapter one, about welcoming your suffering. Learning to welcome it, because it's showing you where you're not yet free. So this is the first concept I want to introduce you to tonight, because if you're serious about getting totally free of this yourself, your suffering, which means you're suffering, which is entirely possible, because one of the things all people who wake up discover is that, wow, this is so obvious, and why didn't I realize it before? And you realize it's everybody's true nature. And Zen, they talk about it as true nature, because it is our true nature. What gets in the way of suffering is our stories and beliefs, that, and ourself as a separate person. In fact, Nisargadatta Maharaj, in his book, I'm That, is a great famous non-dual teacher from Bombay. His name, Nisargadatta, means he who abides in the natural state. The natural state is one of pure presence, pure openness. So the first step then is to welcome your suffering. At least be present with it. And eventually you learn to welcome it, because it's showing you where you're not yet free. Because as long as you're still suffering, you're not free. The Buddha said, enlightenment is the freedom from suffering. Town of Sebastopol. The second step, notice this thought or story you're telling yourself, because there's always a thought or story behind the suffering. You have to analyze it, you have to figure it out, you just have to notice it. Maybe say to yourself, oh, I'm getting caught up in that story again. Maybe the story is, it'll never work out, it's hopeless, I'm stuck, I'm not worth anything. Some version of that. Just notice the story. And the third step is to see the truth. And what's true is that the thought or story comes and goes, just like the suffering comes and goes. But you are the aware being that is always present. So breathe and relax and be the pure aware being you are. Be here right now as this aware being.
What did you say the third step was again?
See the truth.
See the truth.
The truth is that the suffering comes and goes, the thoughts and stories come and go, but you are the aware being that's always present.
But Jimmy, you have to
big suffering or upset, whether it be emotional and physical or, you know, any level mental, it's hard to step back in that moment and realize yourself as presence.
Yes, it is.
It's like, it's just when you ask me.
Yes. Okay. So you have to learn the practice. It's a learned process. You become better and better at doing it.
Do you teach that in Saturday? I mean.
Yes, I do.
We can practice.
Yes. Yeah. We'll take the time. Jean. I've been working with Jean last year or two or two. So what's your experience been with the practice?
Well, just recently I was in a huge conflict, and I can relate to what you're saying because it just went out the window.
Yeah.
But I would say when things aren't super stressful, or you know, it does get easier and easier. It definitely does. But just 2 weeks ago or whatever, I thought I haven't learned anything. But I'm realizing
that is.
But I know. But I do think for sure over the 2 years it's come. Easier and easier, and I see the truth of it, but you know, I don't feel awake yet, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yes, you look. I look forward to it for 20 years. I tell the story in my book, this book here, but I had this experience of enlightenment when I was 29. When I woke up one morning, sleep. Next to my first wife in Santa Rosa, summer's morning, at my eyes, and I'd just been meditating for 2 years. Hadn't taken any drugs at that point, or, that all came later, the drug taking, for a few years. I opened my eyes, and there was a chink of sunlight coming through Venetian blinds, and then dust motes were dancing in the sunlight, and all of a sudden my gaze was transfixed by these dust motes, and I heard a mourning dove cry outside, and suddenly everything in my mind fell away, and I had the most incredible experience of oneness in this moment I ever had. It was just magical. And then a thought crept into my mind. So this is what these teachers like Krishnamurti are talking about. It's all right here. That we don't have to seek anything. And I crept out of bed and went into my study to write about it. And then as the day wore on, the experience faded, and I kind of reverted back to my normal uptight self, mental self. But something in me had shifted. It was as if a hole had been punched into my consciousness, and I was seeing from the reality behind reality, and I knew at some level I was that reality, and that oriented me. I realized it was the most incredible state of peace and oneness, and I wanted to live in that state all the time. And so I began my journey, and it took me another 18 years, but I got freer and freer.
Jim, would you say that, I mean, I'm really just asking in a way to kind of let go of the illusion of like being in this awake state all the time. I don't know, I don't think it's an illusion, but what my experience is, you know, there are moments where there's a lot of deepening, a lot of presence, a lot of spaciousness. And, you know, usually I say, wow, you know, and it's very quiet and great. And then there are moments where there's a lot of activity, even if there's not difficulty, it's just mental and it's hands-on and whatnot. So are you suggesting that there's a point where you're really just kind of living this other orbit within this orbit? Where it's really deep, it's really clear all the time?
Yes, the moment of awakening happens when you see that everything between your ears, everything, including all the thoughts, including all the I thoughts, the me thoughts, your personal history, everything is unreal. And yet you as awareness, as consciousness, are still here. Now, let me ask you this. What's the one thing you know for sure?
That I personally know for sure? I would say that there's something that lives within, outside, that goes on. That there's a energy that continues. But I'm tuned into it all the time now.
What, could we say this? We know that we exist in this very moment, right here, right now. Would you all say that? Could you all say that?
Mm-hmm.
You know you exist right here, right now.
I know I exist right here, right now. Is that what you wanted?
Yes.
You wanted us all to say?
Well, can you see that? Can you see the truth of that?
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know that's true, right? You exist right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
Is that true for you? You can see that. Can you all see that?
Yeah.
We exist here right now. Now everything else is up for grabs. I mean, we have relationships, but you know, and they'll probably be there when we go home. In fact, but maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, people, you know, the sky could fall and a bomb could drop on us. You know, it's. Particularly if we're living in Afghanistan, of course, we wouldn't have to have this conversation in Afghanistan. I'd have my head chopped off as an infidel. Because there's a lot of investment in religious stories, whether it's Islam or Christianity. So, awakening is knowing that you exist right here, right now, and you're comfortable with that existence, you're relaxed into your true nature. That's your true nature. That's our true nature. And I've had personally two marriages and a number of girlfriends, and now my relationship has changed. I was born in New Zealand originally, and now I live here, and I used to live here, and now I live in LA, and so a lot has changed in my life. But I know that I exist here now. And existence to me always feels relaxed and easeful. And I enjoy existing. I enjoy being. I enjoy my life. But I honor the past, the stories of the past, the history of the past. I keep an eye on the future, you know, make plans, and as you see by this flyers out here, and set goals. And I'm flying to Manila on the 14th of this month for 10 days vacation. I had to plan that trip. So I honor the past, I keep an eye on the future, but I live right here now. And because this is the only reality for me. It's right here now. And everything happens from here now.
How do you release the attachment to the story?
Well, that's...
That's a big one.
Right. We release the attachment to the story in this non-dual path that I teach by seeing again and again and again that the story is not real. It was real once. The only thing that's real right now is what is here now. No story is real now. Just this here now is what's real. So this is why it's a process. Why it takes time to get free. That the more you see that, wow, that story is not real. It was real once. And it creates so long as I think it's real now, it creates the real feelings of anger or guilt or shame or whatever in me. But once you see that the story is not real, it lets go by itself. And you're here now in the present, and this, the emotional energy attached to that story unwinds, dissolves. And you feel a new spaciousness and ease within.
Isn't the story ever a happy story that you remember that, you know, you were happier at one time?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I have many happy stories.
Okay.
And,
so you still have to let go of those two.
Well, I may, you know, smile inwardly at a memory. Well, in fact, I, my son's mother, Barbara, has a great sense of humor. We got divorced a long time ago when he was young, but she, I had a flyer up on my little cottage where I live on Cherry Ridge Road. Of a workshop given by Jean Klein, this teacher, my teacher. And Jean was a very European man, very spoke with a very thick accent. And his photograph of the workshop had a photograph of him, and above the photograph it said, "Who am I?" question mark. And then it described the workshop was in Hawaii. And Barbara came into my place and saw that flyer, and she said, "Who am I? Doesn't that old fart know who he is yet?" "Hell, for $10 I'll tell him." I still laugh at that. That was happened like 10 years ago, 20 years ago. That was a happy story, a fun story. It always evoked a smile and a laugh in me. Or maybe you remember the happy time you had in England or visiting the Pyrenees or whatever. And you smile about that and you indulge the memory a little bit. Or, you know, you, I was coming through Sebastopol and haven't been here since last Thanksgiving, and I had a couple of memories come up, and I just, I've kind of visited those memories a little bit, and then I just come back to the present. Because when you're awake and free, you cannot help but live in the present. So, two handouts. The because I'm doing a workshop on Saturday in Jena, the Jena Inn. It's $50 for a single person from 10 till 5. We'll have lunch at the restaurant in Jena. We'll have lunch together. And then it's $80 for couples. And we'll just go more into this teaching. And also, the other yellow flyer is about my Esalen workshop in November, from the 14th to the 19th of November. I've been teaching Esalen for the last 6 years, and it's always a great workshop. And again, we just go deeper into this. We communicate more. We just go, people get freer and freer of their stories. And I thought tonight, you know, I really want to, if this work interests you, my approach interests you, I want to develop more of a following of students, people who, and a student I define as someone who really wants to, who resonates with me, resonates with this path, and is committed to waking up, becoming free. Now, I tell the story of Juliana. I tell her on the back of this book, tell her story, and I tell it in chapter one, the very beginning of chapter one. Juliana, I gave a talk on enlightenment about a year after I had the strokes. I had three strokes 6 years ago over a period of 5 months, and they really knocked my, the third one really knocked me on my ass. I was hospitalized at UCSF and 4 days in intensive care, 2 days in regular hospital. And I came out, and I came to the hospital. I couldn't move the right side of my face. I could hardly raise my right arm. I walked with a limp. I couldn't think clearly, and I couldn't speak properly. I had 36 sessions of speech therapy, and it took me about a year and a half to recover. But remember, I'd already woken up in 1995. So I'd woken up 8 years before the strokes. So that enabled me to go through the experience of the strokes without any resistance. One of the things about awakening is you don't resist anything. You just go with the flow, whatever. And you may make changes, but there's no resistance inside you. And I was lying in my then girlfriend's bed at the time, just out of the hospital, and suddenly a kind of discrete thought formed itself. And the thought was, thank God I'm free. Because I had no fear. And the veil between life and death was very thin at that point. I wasn't sure I was going to live, or I didn't know what was going to happen. And then shortly after that, another thought formed itself. I have no fear of death, but do I want to live? And I realized, yes, I want to live. My God, I want to live. Because I was only 57 at the time. And I was halfway through this book. This book took me 10 years to write. Went through many variations, many title changes, many versions. I've written other books, and it took me a year or two. And I want to live. And so I formed a clear intention to get well. I daily visualized the blood vessels opening up in my brain. And I began walking and, you know, gradually working my way back toward health. And here I am now.
I can attest to that time.
Yes. Well, I saw you as an acupuncturist.
Yeah. And I knew Jim for a really long time. I was really impressed with how he held himself in the time of the strokes. It could have hugely triggered
suffering, you know, massive suffering.
Yes, huge. And it would have for most people. And I was very humbled by how you surrendered to it.
Yes.
And there didn't appear to be any fear associated with your experience. You were very in the moment, like, okay, this is what's happening, and, you know, with a goal to get better.
Yes.
How much more?
Yes.
I was interested in hearing your report again about when you were in the hospital, because I mentioned that Walter Bloom said it's worth, and he had a brain tumor, and he was operated on that. Many of you may know Walter, and he was at UCSF.
Uh-huh.
He was in intensive care for I can't remember how many days, and people were very worried about him because he was non-responsive. Some members of his family thought, but anyway, he came out of it, and he reported that he was completely aware of what was going on, and that he was serene. He said, I just did zazen.
Yeah.
Because he said, what else was there to do? In a way, Walter had that kind of dry sense of humor.
Yes, he does.
But actually, there were other things to do. You could panic, you could freak out. But I helped take care of Walter, me and many other people.
Oh, good.
Over his last month, and he was content. He was content if it went this way, he was content if it went that way. So I just wanted to offer that as another example of somebody who was in that kind of situation in the hospital. But it made me realize how meditation, spiritual practice, it does bear fruit.
Right, it does.
It does bear fruit at times like that.
So how long did Walter die after this brain surgery?
4 or 5 months.
Right. I remember having many lunches with Walter at the Whole Foods.
Yes, he loved Whole Foods.
Yeah. A beautiful man.
take a picture of him? I don't know.
I do have a picture of him. Do you want me to give that?
At some point before we end.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
So I'm going to do this workshop and teach at Esalen. I'm doing events back in Southern California full time, and I was telling about Juliana. So Juliana was, so after the strokes, about a year after the strokes, I went and gave a talk at a conference in Santa Fe. I already arranged this before the strokes happened, so I was kind of committed to it, and I was kind of still not, I was still healing, so I was a little bit, my speech was a little bit off, and I was a little bit labored in my presentation. But about 80 people there, and afterward, this woman, Juliana Dahl, who's a tantric therapist, educator, living in Boulder, about my age, came up to me and said, you know, I love your talk. I want to wake up. Will you be my teacher? And so she was the first person who asked me to be her teacher. So I said, yes, of course. I want a student. So I said, oh, great. So but she lived in Boulder. So we set it up so that she'd call me every 2 weeks, so twice a month, at an hour conference on the phone. And we'd just talk. And we did this for a year. And then she began inviting me out to Boulder to do workshops in her home. She gathered people in the home and, you know, did workshops. And then she finally woke up. She's getting freer and freer and freer. And she tells her story in the book and finally woke up. So it took her 3 years to wake up. But she was committed to my teaching, the way I did the teaching. And you know, if someone resonates with me and my work, my approach, and you're getting free and free. It's been 2 years now.
One more year. And
it can happen. It's been happening. It can happen like 3 years or 2 years. It takes time. It took me 20 years, but yeah. I've distilled it down in such a way that if you seriously embrace this approach, which is doing the practice. Now the practice, let me talk a little bit more about the practice, because I speak about the practice all the way through the book. It's really, many people just get it down to one step. The one step practice is this: breathe and relax into being. So breathe and relax into being now. And we're all, if you're here now, no real thoughts are going in your mind, you're in the enlightened state. It's that simple. So what people do, they notice they're getting caught up in a story, and that reminds them to breathe and come back to presence, come back to being. Because story is not where it's at. No story will liberate you. That's the problem with all religion. All religions have a story. It's built upon a story, and you say the prayers, you move in the chants or whatever, and that it's hope for the liberation. That's the old way. It doesn't work. I went to a satsang with people from the Aurobindo, Sri Aurobindo Ashram in LA. It's a private home. And I sat through that thing and I thought to myself, these people have been meditating for 30 years. And then now we're not any freer. They're sincere, they're genuine, but it's all ideas, and they feel the peace of meditation. And that's not to be denied in them, because it's, you know, meditation does lead to peace. But doing this practice is a way of, you can then, if you're in an argument with your husband or wife or child, and you're getting caught up in a story. I work with couples. I do private sessions. I work with individuals and couples. And I'm working with a couple actually this Friday. And it's the same with everybody. I just have them be very present. Being very present here now. And then we look at what gets in the way of their being present. Because if this, sooner or later, some story activates in their mind and triggers some emotional reaction. And I'm free, so I can, because I'm free of any story. I have no investment at all, except in the other person's freedom. I'm not even attached to that. I mean, if people want this freedom, you can have it. And I would work with you happily and guide you and show you the way, in my way. So it's a workshop on Saturday, and I'm doing a free intro on Jenna in on Saturday, Friday night.
How does that differ from today, tonight, Friday night?
It's the same. Mm-hmm. But as you come deeper and deeper into presence and your true nature, you realize, oh, it's not about ideas. It's not about something new. It's about coming deeper and deeper into presence. So we do some, we're doing the workshop on Saturday, we'll do some eye gazing exercise, like people divide up into pairs, and we'll share our stories, and I'll work with someone up front, and you know, probe where they're stuck, where they're stuck currently in their life right now, and then because it's so participatory and everybody's so present, people, shifts happen for everybody, and you can't do this work of being present without some kind of a shift happening. I was in LA on Monday night, talking about 2 nights ago. Had a group meeting in my house, and we were talking about the judgment, and this guy had this major realization how judgmental he was, and that triggered something for somebody else, and somebody else saw that, oh, my ego is getting in the way. So we all have an ego. I have an ego. Whenever I say I, that's my ego. You can't live in a world, with the world without an ego. You can live on a mountaintop and have, I have an ego, but I'm a marketplace teacher, not a mountaintop teacher. Ramana Maharshi was an example of a mountaintop teacher. He's not a good model for Westerners. He's a good model of the purity of the message, but I'm a marketplace guy. You know, I like wine and women and song and the things of the marketplace. And, you know, like a party occasionally. But I like most of all, my greatest passion is to guide people to, wow, the freedom of their true nature.
Mm-hmm. So you feel like this attachment to some aestheticism where you do sit on the mountaintop and don't have relationships, you know, sexual relationships, and don't enjoy a lot of the carnal pleasures of life, like wine, women, and so on, or belong to this phony, I mean, not phony, but this past that doesn't work, and we can live in the present, be enlightened, and still enjoy.
Yes, and still enjoy life. In fact, that's the whole thing about enlightenment or freedom or self-realization. You begin to really enjoy life. You enjoy everything in life. Just enjoy your life. That's the essence of what all this comes down to. And, you know, I thought I wanted to be on the mountaintop at one point. I went to India, climbed in the Himalayas, sat with yogis at the, you know, near the source of the Ganges. I did all that, but I realize I'm a marketplace guy. That's why I moved to L.A.
That's pretty harsh.
Yeah, it's a harsh, it's a tough world. It took me a few months to adjust, I tell you. I was a bit shaky at first. It was like, I wasn't sure. Mom, maybe I didn't like this. I was kind of, did like it and didn't like it. But that was a transition I just went through. It was very, very intense down there. Very intense environment. But, you know, you got basically 11 million people in the greater LA basin. As it compared to like 5,000 or 6,000 here in the Sebastopol city. Of course, more in the surrounding area. So there's more of everything down there, and I'm enjoying it. So any other questions?
I have two questions.
Yes.
Why do single people pay more for your workshops?
That's a way of encouraging couples to come.
Discouraging some of people.
Oh, and now, by the way, if anyone wants to do the workshop, there's a, you know, issue with the fee or, you know, whether we pay, I'd be happy to. It's not about the money. So you want to do the workshop, pay what you can.
I'm also curious about your title. I understand the end your story part. I'm curious about the begin your life. Are you saying as long as I have a story, I haven't started living?
No, but, when you have no story, then when you're just present here now, then everything opens up, everything becomes possible. You may discover something new about yourself when you truly get free of your story. And like I moved to LA with the mantra, open, I'm open to whatever. That's still my mantra. And in fact, one of the titles I played with for the book was Every Moment is New. Because, so you begin your life, you know, everyone has a life, and then their life works and so on, but the people are wanting something, hungering for something more. This is a something more. Answer your questions? Get your satisfaction or maybe not?
My issue was, I certainly have suffering. My most important issue right now is not overcoming suffering. It's about taking action. I feel kind of frozen.
Frozen?
Yeah. So... there are actions I need to take, and I manage to find other things to do on a regular basis. Anything to say about that?
Yeah. So what is the action you need to take?
Get out resumes and get job interviews.
You're not working right now? You're not working right.
Correct.
Yeah, you are. Right, okay.
I'm not working.
Right, so you have an issue with the fee.
Oh, well, yeah. But that's not my biggest issue. So,
what's your biggest issue?
That I'm not actively searching for work.
Uh-huh. So what do you think that is? Why do you think you're not actively searching for work?
Don't know what work to search for.
What work have you done in the past?
Software engineering.
A software engineer.
Mm-hmm.
My son does that. But you want to do that? Works? Do you like it at work?
No.
So you want something new? Well, maybe if you come to the workshop, we can after the 7 hours of the workshop, you'll I'm sure you'll develop new insight into maybe I want to do this. come as my guest. The lady in yellow. What's your name?
V.
V. What's a beautiful name. My cousin in New Zealand was named V. V-E-E?
Just V.
V. Yeah. So what's your story, V?
Well, right now I don't have too much of a story.
That feel good to you?
Yeah, actually it does. It feels very good. I've been enjoying everyone's... I don't even know if they're stories, but thoughts and feelings tonight.
Yeah.
That's been very interesting.
Yes. Have you been on this path a long time or a short while? A spiritual path?
Yeah, I would say a long time. I just wasn't aware that that's what I was doing.
Uh-huh. Is there any question?
No, actually. But thank you.
Beautiful. And lady next to you, your friends?
Uh-huh.
What's your name?
Marie.
Do you both live in Sebastopol?
No, neither of us do.
Santa Rosa.
Uh-huh. So what drew you to tonight?
I'm always interested in not suffering. when I get into those suffering places, or when I notice, I'm suffering, and and I can watch my mind what it's doing. So I'm always interested in ways of not attaching to that story, whatever it is, or I'm glad or not about.
So you're on the path of freedom from your story, would you say?
Yeah, continually. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it pops up, I find.
Yes, it does.
And that's, so I'm always interested in hearing other people and sitting in community with people that are like-minded, which is always really helpful to me.
Can I come to the workshop and think about it?
I'm working. Otherwise, I would.
Oh, good.
Pretty much a living story.
Can I come to the workshop?
I'm thinking about it. I have another thing on Saturday, but I'm going to see if I can switch it.
Good.
I think it would be helpful.
I must say, I like your approach because you are a gentle speaker, and I have been to other speakers that are very dogmatic and very rough, I would say, with individuals, and I don't find it helpful for myself. Some people may find it that really, really wonderful, but that the whip kind of thing doesn't work with me at all, so I'm always real, I like to kind of test myself.
Good,
to see if it resonates with me.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
I'll be coming back to Sebastopol, so if you want to, I forgot to bring a piece of paper in, but if you, legal pad or something like that, so if you write your name and email address down, I'll keep it on my email list and they'll notify you of future events.
When do you think you'll be back?
Well, I am, I'm not sure. I've got a few events in end of June and July and, Southern California, but certainly by Thanksgiving, but maybe I'd like to come back every 2 months actually, ideally, but I need to build a little group of students. And the student, by the way, is I just use that, sometimes I call my private people mainly clients, but I let me tell you about the word student, because the students and then they're awake beings, people who've found freedom. And so a student is someone who doesn't feel awake, who still gets caught in separation, conflict, suffering. And when you're awake, you no longer get caught. I talk about residues in the book, you can get caught momentarily, but you see it pretty quickly. And you realize, wow, I really got caught up in that story. And then as you, once you wake up, the residues get fewer and fewer and further between as the years go by. I have a saying, but not in the book, but I sometimes tell people that about the difference between a master and a student, is that the student still some aspires, the master knows that he or she is always a student. Whereas a student still aspires someday to be a master. Because I think, you know, being a master is like where it's at. Not realizing that mastery is simply a realization of you're always a student of life.
So even though you say you've woken up, you have slips?
I have had slips. I'll tell you about this, actually. When I woke up, and the story of my awakening is in my book, it's called, and the section called My Realization, which is in chapter 4 or 5. And then I realized when I woke up, I was free. And I enjoyed my state of freedom for about 6 months. And suddenly I had some difficult financial circumstances. And suddenly I felt internally rocky again. For about half a day, I felt shaken. I thought to myself, am I losing my enlightenment? Which is in itself a story. And then after half a day, the energy cleared and I felt fine. And it would happen about every 6 months, something would happen, but it would happen for shorter and shorter periods of time. And then time went by when once every 6 months, once every year. And then the last residue that I had to deal with was my son, actually, because we're biologically and energetically connected with our children. I would worry about him. I remember... that I no longer worry about. I haven't worked. So no residues have risen for the past year or two. But we're still human. So I know Jean Klein, at the end of his life, he had several strokes and was quite ill and needed round the clock. Care in the last months of his life, and I know he got angry a few times, and so residues arose in him. But basically, awakened people, free people, don't get angry, don't get upset. They just go with the flow of things, and always present, responding to what is. And respond intelligently and creative to the needs of the moment and just enjoy their life.
I've heard you and other teachers say there's nothing wrong with emotions, just as long as strong emotions like anger or sadness or whatever. So you're not saying that awake people don't experience those, the whole area of emotions, are you?
No, they do. But I personally, I don't experience anger, because I'm just not an angry type. I mean, some people who were really angry before they woke up may experience moments of anger after their awakening. So anger's never been an issue for me. But sadness, I mean, I watched the movie Letters to Juliet, or did you know that movie? It's a real tragic. I cried a lot of the way through it. It just put a lot of emotion in me. And I watched the Letter of Juliet. Yeah, it's a wonderful movie, actually. It's about a woman's trip to Italy and... Yeah. Pardon me?
Doesn't get there for a while.
Yeah, right. The letter, yeah. And I watched the movie for the second time, The Pianist, by Roman Polanski. And that moved me to tears, too. Certain scenes in that, and shock and horror at times. So yeah, there's all those emotions of experience, but they're not held on to. Your basic emotional state is always one of ease and relaxation and harmony and peace and flow.
So, I'm sorry, but I've been to L.A. My daughter lives there. And just driving on the freeway, it's almost impossible not to get angry because people won't let you out of the lane, they won't let you into the lane, you know, that sort of thing. Don't you have these kind of flashes?
No, not at all. No, I just go.
You're just like, hello.
Go with the flow of the traffic.
You ride your bike, right?
No, I actually own a bike because of my strokes. Yeah. I do a walk a lot, though. I drive. I live about 40 minutes from the beach, walking. So I drive 20 minutes, get in my car, park it, and then walk the rest of the way and go for an hour-long walk. But I just, you know, anger, you know, road rage, you know, that's what unawakened people do, people who live in separation. When you realize that everyone is... the fundamental realization of awakening is that we are one. We are one consciousness manifesting in these individual bodies, minds, and forms. Like we're all the ocean manifesting in these individual, separate, appearing waves. But you don't see the waves as separate anymore once you wake up, once you're free. You see beauty all around you. And you see, you look into another person's eyes, and you just see them as a beautiful soul. A beautiful being, a reflection of yourself.
So, for example, when you're on the freeway and somebody cuts you off, or because LA is real frenetic,
yes,
on the
yeah.
freeway. So, what kind of place do you put your mind when you're in that kind of?
Well, because it's not that you put your. It's not the right way to say it, because you realize you're not your mind. You have a mind,
yes.
But you're always this aware being. It's just. Driving down the freeway. And so the other thing is that once you, the freer you become, the less you attract those kinds of energies. So I never get caught up in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And if once in a while someone cuts me off, I just let them go through. Non-resistance, going with the flow.
You're not chasing down and try to cut them off.
No. And I, you know, because LA is so big and so vast, and everything is multiplied to the nth degree down there. It was a case of road rage just happened after I arrived there, which is terrible. It resulted in someone's death,
mm-hmm.
and the life in prison of the guy who caused it. And one moment of just unconscious behavior, and one life is ruined. Because he's dead, and the other person is ruined because he's a promising musician, and now he'll spend the rest of his life in jail.
Yeah.
That's what happens when unconsciousness reigns. So we are all the same consciousness. We're just manifesting in these different personalities, bodies, and minds. It's beautiful to see you all. And yeah, thank you. And we're.
So can I just say something about your teaching style?
Yes.
Which, you know, I feel like my issues, you know, keep coming up over and over in different ways. And I just, you know, I admire what you said is gentleness, but also patience and, yeah, I just think you're amazing for me to kind of tell my story.
Yes, thank
I
you.
I recommend it.
Maybe I should be more hard-nosed.
Maybe I'd wake up.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe my approach all this time has been wrong. Maybe I should be an asshole.
That would make an interesting title to a book.
You should have been an asshole. That's right. I could call your newest book.
Ruin Lane. I'm going to be an asshole.
We
sorry.
Flights of fantasy.
We have this name, we call them kick-ass gurus, like they're gentle gurus like me, and the kick-ass gurus like Darfi John and Werner Erhard and so on.
Just like there are mountaintop gurus and
yes, exactly, and old shades in between.
Yeah.
Old variations in between. So I am who I am, and but I, one of the ways my teaching has changed, is I've embodied much more presence. I'm more present now, and so and I realize this is the message. Presence is the practice. The more you learn to be present, and my practice of freedom is essentially a practice of being present. And saying, oh, I'm not my story. I'm this presence here now. This being here now. This is what's real, what's true. That's what I am. So, I can be firm, you know, at times, but I have a lot of patience, yes. By nature, by my human nature, personality, I'm very impatient. I mean, I was a double Sagittarian. Sagittarians are one of the most impatient signs of the zodiac. They want it now. Mm-hmm. But having three strokes and over 5 months really whacks you on the side of the head and teaches you a lot about patience. You have to learn to move your hand again, which I'm working on doing now, actually. I'm working with a Feldenkrais practitioner down there. That's good. Well, I used to be a chiropractor up here, and I know a lot about Feldenkrais. And I had some Feldenkrais sessions after the strokes. It's starting out baby steps, you know. Anything else? How are we doing for time?
10 to 9.
We'll take 10 minutes. We'll just sit here and be with each other and see what should come up. See, everything happens from now. The more you master the art of being present, the more you realize that everything starts from this moment now. Like you start looking for, maybe it starts with journaling, in your case. Maybe you did software engineering, you wanted something else. Maybe you do a journal entry about, you know, what else am I going to do? Or maybe you get some vocational guidance. I know that I'm going to go home tonight, and I'm going to go to a movie with my son tomorrow, see Robin Hood. But other than that, I don't know. But I know I spent 22 years living in Sebastopol, so I have a lot of friends here, so I'm sure I'll see them. So many of them around. It's time to end your story, I would say. Oceana?
For sure.
Yeah.
I'm ready.
Good.
Thinking of these different songs like Janis Joplin's Freedom's Just Another Word for Nothing Left to Lose, which is apparently what your teaching is.
Yes, it's very much, I relate to that song myself. And that's why I prefer to use the word freedom rather than enlightenment or awakening, which are the traditional terms. It's just about being free. when you're free, you realize you have many stories, but you're not your story, not any story. You are just, it's the way of being that's present now. You're not even your name. You're not your ego. You're not your personality. You have a name and an ego and a personality. And as I say in the book, there's only one rule for a person who's awake and free, and that is do no harm. Because now you know yourself as the manifestation of the one consciousness that everybody else is. So you don't harm yourself, including, that includes everybody else. Otherwise you can do whatever you like. But no rules. You can sing, dance, jump, go live in Africa or whatever.
To what degree are stories conscious versus unconscious? To what degree are we aware of our own stories?
That's a good question. That's one of the advantages of doing this deeper work, like doing the come to the workshop and working on an ongoing basis, you know, with me or someone who does this kind of work. Because that stories are very, a lot of our stories are very unconscious. And so it requires sharing about, you know, being with a teacher or guide to discover the deeper layers of what's going on underneath.
Is it required to become aware of the story before you can let it go?
Yes. You've got to first become aware of the story, because that, until you become aware of it, it runs you. You must become aware of it. Becoming aware of it is the prerequisite. Once you become aware of it, it's already going to let go.
Yeah, but as you said, there are layers, because I'm very aware of certain stories, and I haven't been able to let it go, so it's deeper.
All right. So usually the core story, I'll tell you this much, relates to some traumatic event that happened when we were very young. And so one of the ways I work is I do a process around, you know, people. When I take people back to when they're young. And, you know, I remember when I was young, I remember my grandmother took me to my first day in school in New Zealand, Takapuna Primary. I went to North Shore in Auckland. And my grandmother took me because my mother was giving birth to my youngest brother. And my first day in school, little boy named Philip Wallace, he was acting out and misbehaving, and the teacher hauled him up front. There's a woman teacher, bent him over her knee and paddled his bottom. And he wailed and wailed and wailed. And he was told to sit down on the floor next to me. I was horrified. My first day at school. And then I didn't say a word for 6 weeks. And after 6 weeks, the principal asked my mother and father to come to the school. They wanted to know why little Jimmy, hadn't said a word for 6 weeks. So that was incident of childhood trauma, which definitely impacted me. So we all have a story that's deeply ingrained in our unconsciousness, our subconscious. And so the work of awakening is about looking deeply within, and you can do it yourself. You don't have to have a guide, but as I quote Rumi in the beginning of the book here, whoever enters the way without a guide will take 100 years to travel a 2-day journey. So this book serves as a guide. So even if you never met me, you can read the book. If you really embrace it, the message, and do the practice of freedom, It won't take you 100 years. Maybe take you 2 or 3, and then you will be awake. You'll be free. So the key practice is, and you have to do this on your own, but doing it under guidance in the workshop really helps stimulate the process. But you've got to really become generally interested in your own suffering. Why? What causes my voice to choke up whenever I confront my husband? Now, like, really look deep within yourself to find what that is. It really requires a tremendous amount of self-honesty. But it's self-honesty, it leads to freedom, it's liberating. As it says in the Bible, the truth will set you free. And the truth is sometimes not very pleasant to look at, not very pretty to look at. And it's, I think, one of the advantages of being the kind of teacher that I am is that I make it safe for people to look within. Now, you can do it. I kind of cheer them on, hold their hand as they walk through the fires of hell. I'll be here to sign books if anyone wants to buy a book. The store sells them. And I'll sign the book for you. And I want to thank you for your presence and attention tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.